definitely bet that it would in some form.
What I would say about this is that it's not only the refactoring, it's also about intention that you have. For example, in Eclipse, when you are creating a new variable, you just do a new and variable name, and then you can press Control 2 L to create a local variable. So you're thinking much more about what you're actually trying to achieve than about typing in code. But on the other hand, I have a little bit of a fear that by making those tools so smart and allowing us to express intent, that we kind of get away with having all this craft around it. I mean, why do we have semicolons at the end of the lines? Why do we have round brackets after an if statement? There's no reason for having that, for example, in a language these days. But it's still there. And it makes us forget about this. But then, and I see that a lot when we, in ThoughtWorks, we hire graduates as well that we put through training. And they often ask these questions. They're like, yeah, I don't know. It's just there. And I'm a bit worried that we forget about this stuff because we are so used to it and we don't have to type it anymore. But still, it hinders our complexity. And I think one of the reasons why a lot of people like us are attracted to languages like Ruby are because they have a much, much more open syntax and you can get rid of a lot of the things that you don't need. A lot of people are talking, and I think that's what Bruce alluded to domain-specific languages. Often, most people don't mean real programming language with that. You don't want a general-purpose language. It's just a little language that is good for your domain. And Java doesn't work that well. I mean, people try it. I don't know how many of you know JMOC, for example, which is a mocking framework that uses a funny syntax, but it doesn't really look like a language because you have to have double quotes and round brackets, etc. In other languages, it's quite easy to concentrate the written text on what you really want to express, on your intent, and you don't probably need the tools that IDEs provide in the Java land.
Yeah, something quite interesting happened in the IDE Java space. Ever since I started using Java, which was around 96, every year I tried one of those IDEs that was coming out, and there were plenty of few, Visual Cafe, WebGain, and all that, and I was using IDE on the Windows side, which were okay, and compared to that, the Java IDEs were just a joke, and I was a heavy Emacs user, and every time I would try one of those IDEs that would come out, use it for a little while, and come back to Emacs, because, all right, that's fine, but it's a toy, I can't use it. And something happened, maybe, I don't know, around 2002, 2001, when Eclipse and IntelliJ appeared. Probably a confluence of, first of all, the UI. And the UI needs to be really good. The developer needs to feel very comfortable with the UI. It has to be responsive. And maybe we hit an inflection point where finally the toolkits, whether it's SWT or Swing, started being fast enough. And there's also a functionality for developers. We have very, very special needs. Refactoring is definitely something that played a big part and that made IDE so popular. But there are also a bunch of other factors that you need to get right. You need to make it easy for people to navigate through your sources. You need to have good source control support and everything. And for some reason, both IntelliJ and Eclipse hit that mark around 2001, 2002. And we started people suddenly becoming a lot more productive. I'm trying to imagine what it would be like. Is there going to be another of this thing that's going to make everything take off, where the tools are going to help? Again, I don't think the language is going to change that much. Sun has been extremely conservative. JDK 5 has been actually pretty aggressive, considering how Java has moved until then. But they're probably going to stay conservative because now the code base and everything that's out there is already so complex that they're not going to add to it. But it's okay because you have people like the Eclipse Foundation and IDEA that are actually taking Java and running with it and just making us more productive. So I'm just wondering, is there going to be something in the next 5 or 10 years that is going to take Java even further?
Good segue into the next question. This is from Johan in Norway. Have IDEs stopped innovating within refactoring, given refactoring support? And if they haven't stopped innovating, what should we be expecting? What's coming next in terms of refactoring?
Building a project, and as part of that, and somebody may be sharing that project as part of my development effort. absolutely, there's still some new refactoring that need to be explored.
Yeah, I mean, I think that innovation right now is happening at a breakneck speed, and it's interesting to see what competition can do to a language. From the Java perspective, the competition is driven primarily from .NET, but also now increasingly from things like Ruby on Rails. You also have to think about the exposure to these other languages and ideas. So now, I mean, we think that IntelliJ invented refactoring. Well, that's not really true. The Smalltalk refactoring browser is still far and away one of the best, most productive IDEs in the world. And there's another kind of innovation, the innovation by Eclipse that's driving. So you can't get by from building and charging for a base IDE anymore. If IntelliJ were sitting still, they'd be in trouble, but they're not. And that's what's happening with the language workbenches and the new sort of meta language style programming tools where you're basically working with a syntax tree.
Yeah, adding to that, I think refactoring is important. Language workbenches, we'll come back to in a minute anyway. I think another thing that is interesting in IDEs is graphical support. I think a lot of people are very visual, and it's often, I probably don't even like drawing the diagrams in the first place to create some code, but I do like seeing a diagram later on. And I think some of the work, if most people probably work with Spring and Hibernate, there's a good few tools in Eclipse that allow you to visualize your application context file or your entity mapping files, and I think that's a great step. I think we need some unification in that area because, again, like if you bring that technology stack to somebody who's new to Java, they rightly ask, why does Hibernate have a completely different set of graphs than Spring when they're all meant to be part of one open source stack? And I think that's probably something where we'll see some innovation in the IDEs, that they provide toolkits for the plugin writers that allow them to have a similar graph layout or probably better layouting algorithms, for example, to make those graphing views on your code be seen as a different projection, really, of the same XML file, a bit more coherent and better to use.
Yeah, at the risk of sounding a little bit pessimistic, I don't think there's going to be a lot more innovation in refactoring anymore. I think we're about to hit a point of diminishing return where the refactoring are going to be so arcane, and maybe just added for competitive reasons, just so an ID can say they have refactorings that the other ID doesn't have. But when I take a look now at the list of refactorings that IntelliJ or Eclipse offers, and I make a little tally to see which ones are used and which ones I actually don't even understand because I need to go to the help to know exactly what they do. There are actually maybe three or four that are at the very top that are probably 80% of the number of refactorings that I do. Renaming is probably by far one of them, introducing local variables and all that. But after that, the curve really, really goes way, way down. And there are some that I've never touched. I'm thinking, oh, yeah, I think I can see how I would use that. But by the time I remember there is such a refactoring, I actually done it myself. So innovation is going to keep happening. It has to. But my prediction, and I don't know, maybe I'll eat my words in 1 or 2 years from now, is that we're not going to see refactoring as the main point where IDEs come out and say, well, I'm better than the others, or I'm much more productive because you can do this. Because developers are going to say, yeah, that's nice, but I'll never use that.
Yeah, but you still got to consider, we're only talking about one very small part of the equation, and that's the Java part. Even as Java developers, we've got to be dynamic language experts now. If you're doing any web development at all, you're moving towards Ajax, and the increasingly sophisticated code libraries on that side. And there, we have only scratched the surface with the refactorings that are possible and really necessary. Cedric alluded to renaming, and That's easy when you're editing the syntax tree. That's not so easy when you've got duck typing, right? So if you look at the innovation that needs to happen in the JavaScript space, it's a complete mess right now. And I would say that Ruby is kind of like things move in cycles, right? We developed with IDEs and the C, C++, Java space, and then we moved back to the command line with C, and then we moved back into the IDE with C++, and then we moved back into the command line with Java when you had Ant and the J unit, and then now we're moving back into IDE. So things move into cycles. as more people, we probably will never go en masse, but as more people start to pick up the dynamic languages, you'll see a move back to the command line and then back into IDEs as the applications explode in complexity and require the IDE support.
I quickly want to return to Cedric's point about the refactorings and diminishing returns. I think he has a good point there. On the other hand, if you think about, you are saying you don't even know where they are in the menu, and I agree with you. But what we shouldn't forget is that IDEs can also provide different things than just refactorings. They can hint you. Like in Eclipse, you have the problem view. In IntelliJ, you have the view where you can analyze your code. And I think driving refactorings from that is definitely something we'll see in the Java space as well. Again, if we look at what Smalltalk have done, what Dolphin Smalltalk has done, for example, is it just says, do you have a very long block in your if statement? Do you want to change it into a guard statement? So rather than you having to see it, you can drive the refactoring right from code analysis that is pointed at you. And I think a lot of people, or at least I've seen that on a good few projects that I've been working on, we all make mistakes. What I really like about Eclipse, for example, is the checkstyle plugin. It will tell you that method. And when you refactor, you just get your unit tests working again, and sometimes you just don't really realize that your method is growing and growing and growing. And that plugin will tell you your cyclometric complexity is at 12 now. Ideally, it would say, let me help you refactor that. And I think that would be really nice. Something that finds problematic spots in your application and can suggest refactorings. And those refactorings could actually be quite complicated, but it wouldn't matter because the intent is clear. You've been guided to the point rather than having to make the decision yourself.
I just hope it won't tell me that my cyclomatic complexity is up, but instead your method is way too long. That I can understand.
Okay. So, Eric, I have a question for you. Working at ThoughtWorks, and obviously with the extensive background you have with Objective-C, you'll have some appreciation for large-scale projects with many people. Obviously, our tools will never be as good as the ones you had in Objective-C, and our operating systems will never be as good as Next. But in the meantime, what do you see working at ThoughtWorks with fairly large, some of the large projects that ThoughtWorks are doing? What are the challenges for large development teams with IDEs? Since a lot of the features that we've talked about so far are all single user features, I'm going to rename something, I'm going to refactor something. What does it actually translate to when you have, say, more than one developer on a project?
I wouldn't say that they're all like single user features. I mean, they're all features for two developers sitting in front of workstations because you pair. So that to start with. And I think a lot of the features you need on large projects have not very much to do with IDEs. And that's another thing that is probably a theme that will become more and more important in the future is how you can make teams work together and what you can do beyond an IDE. I mean, a lot of people just think, oh yeah, we need some form of version control. But if you look at it, and that's what I've seen on large projects, the difference between using something like, I don't want to name here, but some of the older version control systems and something like Subversion makes a huge difference. You wouldn't see that right away, but if you work on a project like this, you will realize that even such a small change can have a huge impact on a project. The use of really functioning bug trackers, for example, things that allow people to collaborate, software that allows people to understand exactly what story they're working on. It's more collaboration tools, really, that I think will make large teams more successful. But it can also be small tools, like Instant Messenger, for example, if you are geographically split, if you have some people working, I don't know, in London and other people working in Chicago. Having IM running all the time is a huge help. Small tool, but huge help. I'm not really sure that I can think of an IDE feature itself that would make that process much, much easier.
I would like to see better integration to project management software and project management software that looks at the world through an agile view and better integration with tools that help us communicate so that I could say, you know, somebody asks a question about, well, how would you write this? And, you know, I respond and you could drop that right into a method. I think that Eric is right in that the things that make teams work together are effective version control, and that's really independent of the size of the team after you get a certain level of support. But more importantly, the things that are going to impact the process, right? So better project management that looks at the world through an Agile view instead of through Microsoft Project Gantt charts.
Eric brought up some very good points, and I think both Eclipse and IntelliJ team should take notice. And like I said earlier, I don't think there's going to be a lot more happening in the refactoring area. But in terms of community or working with teams, there's definitely a lot of things that can be done now. It's one of the few things, I mean, working on a team, which means, you know, having code reviews and things like that, mostly code reviews actually, is one of those few activities that are left that I have to leave my IDE for. So I know there are plugins, they're beginning to come around, and that's usually how it starts. You start having the core of the IDE, then people start plugging new tools, and as the tools become popular, then they become part of the IDE or they become created by IntelliJ or by Eclipse or by Sun. But we're not there yet. Instant messaging is also, like Eric said, absolutely huge where I work, and pretty much every single place that I've worked at and project that I've worked on for the past, I'm not going to say 10, but let's say 6 or 7 years, instant messaging has been a big part of that. Interestingly, again, I do that with a separate tool than the IDE. Okay, well, maybe we can do better than just putting an instant message client inside an IDE window. It has to be connected to the code. It has to have a lot more, you know, community work, being able to highlight a certain region of code and say, hey, I think this is causing an NPE. Can you see it? And so I'm really hoping that we're going to see some of the IDE features pick up in this area in the next few years.
It's absolutely true that communication is probably one of the biggest challenges that developers face, and doing that communication is time-consuming and is something that people need to be forced to do. I know with the Eclipse teams, Eclipse is probably a pretty good example of a project built using Eclipse that's pretty big. And the way that it works is that these teams actually communicate totally in the open. Every decision that is made for code that goes into Eclipse has a corresponding Bugzilla entry. There's discussions in the news groups around the features. If you want to figure out why something was implemented the way that it is, you can find out, because that communication was done totally in the open. And that wasn't a painless process to develop. The guys that built the initial Eclipse were not used to talking to the outside world. They used to have firewalls set up in front of them to keep people from talking directly to them. And they turned themselves completely around to the point where, at one point, about half of their time was spent just communicating. They're down. The core platform team communicates now. About 30% of their time is done communicating through news groups, instant messaging, Bugzilla, other mechanisms. We're also starting to see integration as Eric, right?
Cedric.
As Cedric pointed out, communication through plugins. The Mylar project has hooks into the Bugzilla system. The Jazz project, which IBM has been talking a lot about, is all about communication, instant messaging, and more within the IDE. Some of the features that were discussed previously are part of that effort. So it's something the community is certainly doing, something that's certainly evolving, certainly something I think everybody recognizes we need and is happening.
Yeah, the goal is pretty clear. I think I don't want to leave my IDE for development tasks anymore. And it's a bit like what I was used to do with Emacs. I know people who use Emacs out there know that, you know, Emacs does everything, and people who are Emacs users don't want to do anything outside, and usually they don't, because Emacs has plugins for everything. And people say with the joke that it's a great operating system that just needs a good editor. We're definitely converging toward that with IDEs. I mean, when was last time that you edited an XML file with a separate program? And once you start using an IDE, that doesn't make sense anymore. You just say, come on, give me an editor that can let me write and read my XML from my IDE so that I can use the same key bindings, I can switch buffers, can have the highlighting, and I know how to configure it because it's the same as Java. And so now every time that I have to do a development task outside my IDE, I cringe a little bit and I have the impression my productivity goes down. I'm hoping this will be addressed soon.
I mean, one thing that I find interesting is that we have covered almost all the Agile values. I mean, we were talking about simplicity, expressing concern that things get too complicated. Wayne was just talking about feedback to the Eclipse people. We were talking about communication. There's one left, which is courage. And I think that's also quite important, courage that enables you to do those refactorings. And that's one of the sets of tools, I think, that will also gain much more importance in the near future, which are testing tools. And by testing tools, I don't mean JUnit or anything like this. JUnit, for me, is not about testing. Test-driven development is about programming in a more elegant way, in allowing me to drive the design of my interfaces, to write more decoupled classes in a better way. When I refer to testing tools, I mean something like Selenium or Abbott or so, tools that actually can drive a web browser, that can drive a user interface written in Swing. And that will also give you much more courage to make changes to your code base, to change architecture even. Because one of the few things that people are still I believe, holding against Agile is saying you have to have the architecture implemented before you do the rest of the project. But often you can't do that because you don't know all the requirements. To make architectural changes, your unit tests don't help you. They will break with an architectural change because they're testing the previous architecture. So you need the end-to-end testing. And I think a lot of tools, we will be seeing a lot of tools in the next few years that will be greatly simplifying that process. Again, using domain-specific languages, trying to express intent in your acceptance tests that are driving web browsers directly.
Yeah, you've also got to, I mean, if we're looking 4 years ahead, then you've also got to look at the impact that all this technology is going to have on developers. For example, if all of our visions come true, then it's going to be very easy to reach any developer anywhere. Almost too easy, right? So, I mean, you could see this great new feature called the shut up button, right? I'm in a groove, shut up, let me code for a little bit. So, I mean, I don't think that we can anticipate all of the problems, but I think that one thing that's pretty clear, technology is going to get in the way in some places.
I'll just point out that IntelliJ already has the shut up button. It's a little guy, and if you click on him, he'll turn his back to you and not tell you anything. Anyway, I have a quick question, Bruce and Cedric, starting with Cedric, actually. You both have recently started to specialize in some different areas. Cedric, I believe you're still working with mobile Java, correct? So I'd like your take on, you know, everything we've been talking about are these, you know, fairly large and complex tools that, you know, could probably even get WebSphere to get something deployed to. What about, you know, looking at it from the mobile Java space? And Bruce as well, you know, what are you seeing as these tools are attempted to be repurposed for Ruby? What are some of the weaknesses in terms of the infrastructure for these tools that are being exposed? And what are some of the things we can actually learn going back the other way?
Talk about the room for improvement. I think Java IME is really standing way up there. And if you're using Java IC or Java IE, you don't know how easy you have it. Things have changed a lot. I mean, Java IME initially was extremely primitive. Now it's a little less primitive. I know we do use Eclipse, and we have debuggers, and we have reasonable emulators. What's very striking, though, for anyone who's doing day-to-day development on Java IME, that first of all, we use a very old JDK. It's one way. You know, it's back in the hash table and vectors and things like that. So when you're used to using annotations and generics and enums and things like that, it's a bit hard. It's very rewarding, though. It's still fun. But the main problem is that all those toolkits that are, whether they come from Sun or Nokia or the main phone manufacturers, they were absolutely not written with the latest discoveries in software. And you can't, when you have the emulator is a black box. You can't program it. You can't automate it testing. That barely exists in the mobile world. It's basically just pushing buttons. That's the best way that you can actually automate your test on a device. And this is really excruciating for someone like me who really, you know, doesn't sleep well at night if the code is not tested or doesn't have, you know, regression and automated testing on a regular basis. But it's a reality. So it sounds pretty grim, but actually it's, on the flip side, it's still very rewarding. And when you can cram some Java code and see it run in a very, very acceptable ways on a device, and by the way, we're way past that now. Phones that you get for free with a contract can run Java very, very effectively. We're reaching a point where even you don't need to care that much about object allocations and your CPU and all that like we used to 2 or 3 years ago. It's reaching a point where we're close to it getting some regular Java IC, you know, programming in the mobile space, and there is no question in my mind that this is going to explode even further. We're going to see more and more people interested. You're writing code that can potentially run 100 million devices, you know, throughout the world, and you're creating jar files that are 100 and 150Ks for that. You can get a lot of mileage for that, and you can get a lot of exposure. You can get your code in the hands of a lot of people. And I think more and more people are going to get on the Java IME bandwagon and potentially all the other toolkits that are going to come after that.
And on the Ruby side, the thing that we really miss is, well, an IDE altogether. but the tools are not missing. They just take a different form. Right, so I do miss the IntelliJ refactoring, probably more than anything else. In fact, renaming something is difficult. It's a tough exercise. But I can do things that will put me in my interpreter in the context of my application very, very quickly. Like, for example, if I've got a difficult bug in the controller, I just type the word breakpoint in my code somewhere and then reload the browser, and the execution stops with an interpreter, and then I can make Ruby method calls in the context of my application. I can query all the instance variables. I can drill through the variable values, and that's a very effective way of debugging. I also have the capability to run my persistent object model in a console, run my application headless with an API, and then take that headless script, like, for example, log this user on, issuing some HTTP commands, put something in the cart, check out, and then I can copy this script into an integration test suite, and that's a sweet capability that I'd love to see in Java. So the emphasis is really different. I said that things go in cycles. We went back to the command line because, well, we had ANT and we had JUnit, which were tools that kind of pushed the state of the art in other ways. And that's what we're seeing on the Ruby side. But soon, as we start to take on larger and larger applications, the command line's not going to be enough. And that's when you'll see the innovation push forward in IDEs.
So a couple of things that really haven't been mentioned much. Bruce, that was the first time the term debugging came up in this conversation. No one's mentioned profiling. In fact, I haven't even heard the buzzword AOP in this conversation. So let's kind of step out of the core IDE functionality in terms of editing and refactoring. Where do you see some of the weak points? Eric, I'd like for you and Wayne as well from Eclipse to address this. Weak points in terms of debugging, profiling, support for new functionality such as AOP that right now is done completely through frameworks and perhaps externally through XML and things like that.
AOP, I think, in particular, is a very good one to talk about because, we really don't know what the future is for AOP, right? We have the technology. We don't necessarily have the wisdom yet to pull it off. But to make AOP fly the way that it needs to, we need better IDE support across the board. And Eclipse is starting to get there. The other IDEs just aren't yet.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I mean, AOP is a really nice thing, and it was a nice thing about 4 years ago, and it's still very useful. But, I mean, on many projects, there's only very, very little points where AOP, in my opinion, is really, truly useful, where it is worth the added complexity. And again, I mean, I think Spring has done a tremendous job in allowing you to do AOP in normal Java without having a special compiler or anything. But on the other hand, sometimes, and I saw this in a recent project, when there was one case which was error handling. It was just something that rendered a component into HTML, and we wanted to catch exceptions and do something special in that case, obviously. And we considered using AOP for it, but then we decided that we would have to introduce the entire team of the configuration syntax you need to use in the application context file in Spring. And in the end, we said, we couldn't really do that with a decorator pattern, right? So we just wrote something that decorated the actual renderer class. We put the error handling code in there. It wasn't as elegant as AOP would have been, but it was just normal Java. Developers understood it right away, didn't have to expose them to new technology. That is what I would say from where I mostly work. I mostly work in application development, not so much in infrastructure development. I think in infrastructure development, it's very well worth it. I mean, if you look at all the tools that need to use CGLib now or all sorts of other bytecode manipulation, they could certainly benefit from that level of abstraction that is raised to make those things like dirty marking of objects in an object relational mapper much, much easier. But yeah, the tooling is definitely missing. So at the moment, it is really only the people who gain the highest, who have the highest gain from using AOP that are going through that extra hurdle. For the average application developer, I don't think the tooling is there yet, and hence people are not using it and use other patterns.
I think you need to have the courage to use AOP. I guess I want to differ a little bit with the question. I think of debugging as actually a very core functionality in an IDE. So for me, the debugger is there. It has to be there. It has to work. I don't really even think about it. I've always had a really good debugger coming from Smalltalk. So I guess I don't really know how to address that. As a services consultant in a previous life, I know that I spent a good deal of my time introducing people to the debugger and increasing their productivity by an order of magnitude. So One thing about profiling, though, I think profiling is something that's really coming into its own. We've had profiling for a long time. We've had some good profiling tools for a very long time, but I've not, again, in my previous life as a consultant, not seen the use of profilers being very ubiquitous. And I think that's changing now, certainly with the open source projects around it, providing free profiling services. We're starting to see more and more people looking at it and certainly seeing articles being written about it and more visibility. That's certainly an area for growth and an area for exploration.
One thing that's interesting is that when you start to look at integrated stacks, then the role and the need or what you need an IDE to do fundamentally changes. So Java has one set of needs because we basically come from an environment of a whole lot of choice. But things are disjointed, so we need a unified vision of the software, and things like profiling get a little bit different, a little different, a little more difficult. When you start thinking about frameworks like we saw Rife, there's a new framework that's been released called JMatter by a guy named Eitan Suez that's like naked objects on steroids. Those types of integrated frameworks should enable things like baked-in testing and baked-in profiling at a much greater level than we've seen before.
So, yeah, just a few words on debugging. First of all, if you're not using a debugger, you're not being as productive as you could be. And I come across people who are very comfortable and say, I don't need that. I use Printline, and it works fine. And it's fine. I mean, I like Printline, too. It comes in very handy when you need to debug. But if you're not using a debugger on top of that, or for a matter of principle, or because it's a bit too foreign for you, or you don't want to learn it, you're really missing out a lot. And there are plenty of problems that you will solve much faster by using both, or sometime one and sometime the other, of Printline and debugger. So what's interesting about debugging is that it's actually an area that hasn't progressed that much. As much as we have learned in terms of refactoring these past years, a lot of progress has been made in terms of editing. Editing our sources. Now we have IDEs that understand our source at the bytecode level. It's not Emacs. Emacs understood our source with regular expressions and just by matching words. Now we have IDEs that understand the bytecode. They really know how your code works, and that's why they're so smart. But debugging, you know, what do I do when I debug? I put breakpoints, I inspect variables, that's mostly it. Sometimes I put watch points, that's kind of rare, comes in handy once in a while. Sometimes I have conditional breakpoints. So again, when you're getting into thorny situations, it comes in handy, but already the usage is pretty low. And come to think of it, that's already what I was doing, you know, 10 years ago with GDB, with the DBX, and nothing much has been invented since then. The only feature that I can think of right now that could be useful, that at least sounds intriguing, is something called back-in-time debugging, where you can single step through code and then say, oh, sorry, I went too far, and then you can come back and it will restore the state as you were. We have assembly debuggers that do that because it's easy to do at the assembly level. It's much harder to do when you're doing that at the language level. So that might be a potential area for innovation for IDEs, but I don't think it's even that useful. So is it? Have we reached the end of innovation in terms of debugging a little bit like we have for refactoring? I'm close to thinking that.
I would say, I mean, some of the features just need to work. And, I mean, if you see developers who use VB6, they do have exactly what you mean. You can just take the execution pointer in the margin and you pull it back up like 10 stack frames. Sorry, not 10 lines within the method. I mean, that works really well. And VB is a language that works probably on an implementation level not so far removed from Java, and people got it to work. Or contrasting example, what always completely surprises me is, and Cameron mentioned that no tools are better than the Objective-C ones, although that's, of course, not true. Objective-C, of course, is compiled into assembly code. And the people developing those toolings can do fix and continue. You can change your code, and you can continue in the method. And that's compiled to assembly code. It really, really surprises me how fragile Java is if you try to use fix and continue. When you're stepping through a program in the debugger, you want to change the source code and want to continue running. It doesn't work that well, despite the fact that, of course, Java has much, much more information in the virtual machine than you have on another system which probably has two CPUs with CPU caches that is executing assembly code. So that is probably a question for Wayne. I mean, why do the modern IDEs not support that so well in Java?
That's a language issue. I mean, we really, really, really need continuations.
Absolutely. It's the IDE is set up to support that sort of thing. We had it in Smalltalk also.
Yeah.
It's a language issue. The JVM support for it is where it breaks.
So we have another question from the audience in terms of basically referencing Microsoft's new release of Visual Studio. And Wayne, what have you seen in this new release of Visual Studio that's missing from Eclipse, and which items out of those do you think are going to show up first?
Well, you know, I am completely and totally unprepared for that question because I have not looked at Visual Studio in about 6 years.
It ceased to be as relevant about 3 or 4 years ago with IDEA, right?
Yeah, I guess, I mean, what you do find is that the people who wrote IDEA have written a plugin for Visual Studio, and I think without that plugin, it's hardly bearable. With the plugin, it's actually quite okay, and the keystrokes are even the same, so you can, I mean, people like myself who switch between .NET and Java and other environments, it's actually quite nice to use similar tooling on both platforms. And Wayne, correct me if I'm wrong, one feature that I saw in Visual Studio that I kind of liked was a way that you could switch from editing classes into a class diagram. So you could change a class name in the class diagram, or you could add an instance variable or add a method. And I'm not a big believer in model-driven architecture, absolutely not. But that thing actually worked in a neat way. So I could see how my classes work together. It was remembering how my layout worked, but I could flick back between the normal writing code and seeing an overview of my classes. Works really, really well if you do something that people have started calling domain-driven design, where you have in your Java a domain model that represents exactly the way the business views their domain. And of course, if you have a business analyst, they don't really like looking at Explorer view or package view of your classes. They really prefer to see a diagram to understand what the relations are between the objects, between customer and address, and so on. So that was one feature I did like about Visual Studio.
We're actually seeing some movement in that area in the modeling project in Eclipse. I actually thought of something. If you have a problem with Eclipse, you can go to Bugzilla, and you can put in a bug report, and somebody will actually look at it, and they will respond. You may not like their response, but you will actually get a response the first time you ask. Whereas I understand with Visual Studio, all bets are off.
That's little comfort. But so I'm just now. I have a plea for you and for Integer people. Please don't let Microsoft out innovate the Java space again. Because that's a situation we were in, I know, before 2000. I was using Visual Studio also for pet projects and all that, and I was really hurting. I was really thinking, man, Visual Studio is really, really good. I wish we had that on Java. And there are times where I know I started leaning towards, you know, I'm going to switch to Windows development just because it's more fun, because the Visual Studio is really, really that good. So the tables have turned now. I really think that IntelliJ and Eclipse are by far ahead of Visual Studio. Last time I checked, it was a couple of years ago, so I might be a bit outdated, but they are way behind now, and they seem to be falling behind even further. Microsoft usually never lets that happen for very long. They're going to catch up. They're going to come back to it. So maybe you're not very familiar with that. I really hope you have a lot of people on the Eclipse team who try Visual Studio and the various iterations that are being released, and just make sure that whenever something neat comes out in that space, that we can have it in Java as soon as possible.
Well, we really depend very heavily on the community. Right, so if there are specific features that need to be in Eclipse or specific innovations that you need in Eclipse, we count on you and the community to make us aware of those things. Now, some of our project teams, just to be brutally honest, some of our project teams are actually prohibited from looking at competitive products because they need to be very, very careful about contamination. Right? They need to be careful about stealing ideas and that kind of thing. Anyway, at that end, they also have a full-time job that keeps them occupied building our IDE. So we really do count very heavily or depend very heavily on the community to provide us feedback to help us stay ahead and to help us make your days your work day as enjoyable as possible and keep us competitive.
I think when or if the Java community gets blindsided, it's going to be because first we treated the JVM as a platform for running the Java language, right? And second, because there's a whole lot of exploration that's pushing the state of the art with programming languages within Microsoft and thousands of other places. So we ought to be thinking a level up instead of thinking how is Microsoft going to catch us with the IDE? That's a very small part of the equation.
So quick question on some of the technologies that have come out on various. Both Windows and in terms of Java. We have JSF that hasn't been mentioned in this conversation, tooling for JSF and other higher-level Ajax tooling, for example. And on the Visual Studio side and the .NET side, how about any comments on the new link language?
On the Ajax side, it's all about better debugging, better testing of JavaScript. That's that area. The whole space is a wreck. There are products that have 30% coverage, and there are a few of them that overlap just a little bit, but there are huge gaping holes.
Yeah, I think there's actually at the moment there are certain development patterns formed around the lack of tools. What we've been seeing on all the Ajax projects is that we're really trying to keep the JavaScript as slim as possible. And I mean, that ends up in systems that are not really Ajax anymore, they're probably AJ, because we're not really transmitting XML anymore, really. What we're doing is we're processing all the requests on the server, and what is returned in the asynchronous request is not XML, it's just HTML. And the only thing the JavaScript does in the browser is actually take that HTML and hook it at the right place in the DOM, because we find if you return XML, then you have to do a lot of processing in the browser. And we're not afraid of it from a CPU perspective. It's actually better to do it on a client because then your server has less load. We're afraid of debugging it, of debugging the code that takes the XML and creates the HTML from it and does all the manipulation. So at the moment we're seeing, I'm not even sure, maybe it is the right pattern, I don't know, but it's clearly informed by the fact that it's very, very hard to debug JavaScript. And yeah, if there were better tools for it, you see things like the Google Web Development Toolkit that actually do everything in Java and try to insulate you from the JavaScript so you don't have to debug it. If something goes wrong, I've never worked on a GWT project, so I don't know, but I'm a bit worried about the day when something goes wrong in there and I have to debug the JavaScript that I didn't even write, but we'll see.
First, a clarification for people in the audience who might not know what link is. You mentioned link, Cameron, right?
Yes.
It's a feature that appeared in the latest versions of .NET, and C# is the first part of .NET that benefits from that. And in a nutshell, if you need to have an idea what it is, imagine you're reading C# code, and then suddenly in the middle of your C# code, you have a SQL statement. Not a string, a real SQL statement. That is going to produce a C# object, which you can then reuse and make calls on. That's the idea behind link. And it's much broader than that. Link is about any language, not just SQL. And they're trying to make it very, very seamless to integrate the main language you're using with other languages. I have to say it's very unsettling. When you start reading those listings and you're reading C# and suddenly you switch into a totally different language, you're thinking, gosh, that's if you think you've seen spaghetti code in your life, wait until link starts being very, very popular. But I don't mean that in a bad way, because unfortunately, I'm afraid, I think it's really where we're going. And we've been doing that for a while, actually. When I started thinking about that, I realized, I like to think that I do Java mostly, but I've been using mixed source files for quite a while. I've been using java.comments, I've been using XML, HTML, and going back and forth between all these things. And so whether we like it or not, we've been doing this multi-language thing for a little while. And considering the complexities of the kind of software we write now, the only way is we're going to have more multiplicity. We're going to be going back and forth and switching context between the main language you use and switching to another language all the time. So I think link is a good first step, and I'm afraid we should get used to it because we're going to see a lot more of that in the coming years.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, we talked about IDE support initially, and you're even using more mixed source than you probably realize. I mean, if you look at stuff like HQL or JPQL, Java Persistence QL, you have all those statements that link would have as proper language constructs in Java strings. And, I mean, you don't really have IDE support for JPQL, not in the short term, I guess. And you see sometimes in Spring even, you have a lot of XML files that mix Java in, and then you get some special IDE support. I think Microsoft, in that respect, is absolutely on the right way. They added a very, very small amount of language features, the ability to pass in blocks or lambda functions. It's very, very small, and the rest really is syntactic sugar on top of it, which makes it much more readable. So there's two key ingredients. One is to have borrowed a couple of ingredients from dynamic languages like Ruby and introduced them carefully into C#. But on the other hand, equally important, they have added the ability to have syntactic sugar to make languages a bit more readable and express your intent more closely aligned with the problem domain, rather than having to put round brackets and all sorts of other funny things in places where they really hurt your understanding.
Yeah, we should really look at the proliferation of languages that we deal with within Java for what it is. The AOP, point cut language, additional XML, annotations, all of these are bolt-ons because Java wasn't satisfying us, because it's not dynamic enough, because we want delay binding, because we want to implement cross-cutting concerns. And so that's really the price for keeping Java, right? The bolt-ons, dealing with all the different bolt-ons and the complexity is the price for continuing to raise the abstraction in Java. You can't maintain backward compatibility and still carry Java forward the way that we need it to be. So, I mean, we ought to look at those complicating features for what they are. They're brilliant enhancements that are extending and preserving the life of Java.
I guess I have two questions out of that then. One comes from Garrett, and the other, we'll start with the simple one first. In terms of Java the platform, what are the changes that actually have to be made down at the JVM specification level, perhaps at the language level, to support some of these capabilities, if indeed they should be supported? In other words, if that's where the next level of functionality and basically developer productivity would come from. And secondly, you know, Garrett pointed out, he said, well, at what point do we just make a clean break and say, look, enough is enough. Maybe we shouldn't keep trying to stitch these things onto Java. What, you know, at what point are we going to eventually just say maybe backwards compatibility isn't what we need and come up with something different?
Yeah, I think the backward compatibility question is a good one. I think it's to this point, Java's been successful because of conservative stewardship, because we really enable backward compatibility, because we've carried previous customers along with every step. But at some point, you say, well, we've got dominant market share. What we're concerned about is being outpaced by the competition, and it's time to unmake some of the bad decisions, and that requires breaking backward compatibility. Now, you don't do it with every point release. You do it every 5 years, every 10 years, or on major releases, and you allow backward compatibility compiler options. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that we really have to be cognizant of what we want out of Java, right? So if you want Java to be a platform for running Java the language, then we're managing it just fine. If you want Java to manage dynamic languages, then we've got to decide, well, which languages? Do we want to write a JVM for the next 5 years or the next 10 or the next 20? Well, if it's the next 10 or 20, then you start to have to think towards functional languages and things like continuation support, things like tail recursion optimization to really enable the next generation of functional languages. If you just want to be 5 years from now, well then it's a much different, a much easier scenario to accomplish in the short term. Things like duck typing and features of that.
Yeah, I think Bruce has a great point here. I mean, you can think about the language and the JVM as two separate things, and duck typing is a classic example. It's not about whether this is technically feasible or not. And I think it is probably not even that hard for Sun to change the JVM in a backwards compatible way that would allow you to implement duck typing. Duck typing is the capability to have an object and rather call it object, which you can't send any methods to because it only implements a few, but be able to send any message. It's like, this is an object and I won't tell you what type it is, but just assume it could be anything. And a couple of languages make that really easy to use and make a lot of things quite simple to express because they have that feature. And there's this ongoing debate, and I think Martin Fowler summarized it at some point, saying there's people who want languages to be enabling. They want them to be as powerful as possible, but at the same time, of course, you can make a huge amount of mistakes with those languages. Then there's the other camp of people who see languages more as directing people to do it in the right way, which is where the whole type safety comes in. Type safety is very directing. It will stop you from making mistakes. The enabling languages say, well, if you get the types wrong, it's your fault, but you have more power. And I think changing the Java language is probably not a good idea because the Java language is clearly in the directing camp. But that wouldn't stop us from changing the JVM to allow the implementation of languages that are more enabling, like Ruby, to run on the JVM.
All right. Any other comments before we go on?
I'd personally be happy if I had lexically scoped closures.
So another thing, I noticed we haven't actually had any reference to, I mean, we've heard a lot about Eclipse, and we've heard some about occasional references to IntelliJ. I'd be curious how many people in the room use NetBeans as well. Any NetBeans users? One?
Wow, that's going up this year.
Two, sorry. All right.
There was some over here?
Two.
Security?
So I have a question for you as well, Wayne. In terms of, I think there are a lot of people that are quite happy to see a few dominant IDEs as opposed to 20 or 30. But at the same time, it's also nice to have more than one. How well is Eclipse working with NetBeans, and how well is Eclipse working with IntelliJ to basically encourage those ecosystems? And in other words, we don't actually just want to see, you know, one IDE to rule them all. I mean, I use IntelliJ because, well, it's the best IDE. You know.
Do you want to fight?
Oh, I thought everyone knew that. Do you actually communicate among this kind of small circle of what I'll call the, those are probably the IDEs that get mentioned the most, Sun, because they have 10,000 people that they pay to blog about every minor release of NetBeans, Eclipse because it's backed by IBM and it's, you know, fairly advanced and free, and IntelliJ just...
Okay, that question's really loaded. First off, IBM is one of our members, and we love all of our members equally. IBM contributes a lot to, to Eclipse, but so do a lot of other companies. Just want to clarify that. As I understand it, and I haven't personally seen this, IntelliJ, their next release, I believe, is actually incorporating our Java compiler. Right, so there's definitely some synergy going there. We think that's really cool. The JDT is an open source project. The whole intent is for commercial companies to pick up these things and make great products based on them, and that's exactly what IntelliJ is doing with our JDT, and that's awesome. We have communicated with the NetBeans people in various tones over the last little while. We've certainly kept the welcome mat open for them to join Eclipse. We've been seeing some crossover. The good people at Genuatech have managed to take some of the code that's part of NetBeans and have incorporated it into their My Eclipse product. Certainly there is some communication going there. I met with a couple of the Sun NetBeans evangelists at the EclipseCon event, specifically over the Genuatech work. At this point, though, I think there is some animosity between Sun and from Sun toward Eclipse. We certainly don't have any grudges against them or any problems with them, but they don't seem to want to work with us, and I'm not sure what to do about that.
Yeah, just look at the name, right? Eclipse.
Nothing really to do with that. We think of it more of an eclipse of the moon.
There you go.
It's all kidding aside. It's kind of a scary thing, right? You can look at competition as something that really gets in the way of integration, right? Or you can look at competition as something like something that's going to push the state of the art. And one of the dangers in having an excellent free open source IDE is that you lose competition and you lose innovation. It's really a scary thing. I'm kind of glad that IntelliJ is based where they are because, well, they don't have the pressures to make as much as a company based in London or in the United States might have. But I think that you also have to look at the other side of it, right? There have been worse development environments than Visual Studio at its peak, right? That was beautiful, and I think that we're starting to see something like that on the Java side, where most of the debugging innovations have already happened. We've already had the key innovation of refactoring, and it's time for that to be a commodity and for the innovation to start happening one level up.
Well, speaking of one level up, we got a question from the audience basically asking how we're going to actually move some of the functionality that we're talking about in the IDEs in terms of building applications in IDEs and push that up the stack toward actual business processes and business analysis. And so Everything we've talked about so far is, you know, refactoring field names, but or things like that, very low level concepts. What about BPM, BPEL? Where do IDEs start to address the actual workflows, business processes, and things like that?
I have one quick answer to that: SQL. I mean, look at it. SQL was sold as the language that will allow the business analysts to be able to express their thoughts in the problem domain and would make developers completely unnecessary. SQL has become so complicated that even most developers don't understand it anymore. So I don't really have very high hopes for all these environments that allow business analysts to directly write code or to directly do enter executable models into a computer. It will certainly help the communication between developers and business analysts, and that's what I said about the class view in Visual Studio. It helps to pull a business analyst in and say, look, these are the classes, and do you think that is actually reflecting the domain? But these tools, this age-old dream of end-user programming, complicated tasks, I think is as far away as it has been, or as near in the case of Excel, for example.
Well, maybe it is about communication. What, you know, if it is about communication and providing tools that allow business people to contribute in terms of communication into the development process, maybe you could look at it from that angle.
So I mean, I think that this is all one part of the same quest, right? It's we're looking for higher abstractions, a better way to express a meta model, and it's just like so. AOP, the Spring framework, the Hibernate framework. These are all pushes to increase our level of abstraction, and you know, BPEL, SDO, they're part of the same quest. How do you delay binding? How do you detach objects? How do you express your meta ideas and just raise the level of your programming? And the more that we start talking about metaprogramming, the more other languages with better metaprogramming capabilities, hopefully on the JVM, make sense.
We're seeing there's a number of projects going on at Eclipse other than the core IDE that may address this space. The GEF project, Graphical Editing Framework, Graphical Modeling Framework projects aim to bring the ability to build more advanced, higher-level tools. The BPEL project aims to bring editing support for building BPEL artifacts. There's an entire modeling project at Eclipse. That, of course, that's just within Eclipse. There's within the community, there's numerous efforts to bring software development to a broader community. I know there's been certainly been a lot of false starts. Visual programming was something that was huge in the mid-90s, and we all know how well that worked out. And So I think it's the technology. There's certainly some advances going on in the space. I think those advances are going to continue to be modest.
Now, Wayne, one of the questions we got from the audience as well was a lot of this functionality is already in a lot of the rational tools. When will we start to see those appear in Eclipse?
Well, that's an extremely good question. Unfortunately, it's really not up to me or the foundation. Rational has a number of people who are working on Eclipse projects. In fact, the BPEL project has a few people from Rational working on it. So a bunch of the functionality from Rational Software Architect will likely make it into one of those Eclipse projects, but it's really their call.
I think lowering the price of Rational would be a good start.
So Cedric,
okay, I'll get right on that.
Cedric, also, you work with TestNG, in fact, if I remember correctly, you started the project. Where do you see integration with testing, unit testing tools and regression testing tools going with IDEs? And if the question's too narrow, you can broaden it from there.
There's something that I've learned with TestNG in these past 2 years is that developers feel very strongly about the way they test. At least those who do. Those who don't, we'll get them eventually. An anecdote about the TestNG plugin, Eclipse plugin that I wrote, was the first version that I wrote was pretty much emulating what JUnit does, and I put it out there, and it worked fine. And within the 24 hours that I posted it, I'd had at least 20 people telling me, where's the red green bar? I said, what? Yeah, or whatever. I said, where's the red green bar? Next thing I know, everybody was saying, yeah, right, the plugin looks nice, but I'm not going to use it if I don't have the red green bar. And it is something that absolutely baffled me because I never really paid attention to that. It turns out that People who use testing in, from the IDE really love this red-green thing.
It's addictive.
Yeah, I guess it is. I work differently. I realized, all right, I'm totally in, I'm standing out. That's, people work differently. So I did the red-green bar, which wasn't that hard. And suddenly people say, oh, the plugin is fantastic. All right, well, there's a lot of shiny objects side to it. But so people feel very, very strongly about that. And what I would like to see a bit more on the IDE side. So we've solved the simple thing of how you should run your test from the IDE. We know, you know, JUnit and Test Engine work the same way, and it's pretty easy to do. The next step that I would like IDEs to take would be to enforce or to enable, make it easier to do test-driven development. It works pretty well with Eclipse right now. You can really do what I call control one programming, which is quick fix programming, where you keep writing code that doesn't compile, and you just let Eclipse correct you. Say, oh, do you want me to add a type here? Do you want me to add a semicolon here? Do you want me to create an empty method to fix that and all that? So it works pretty well. That's a good start to enable test-driven development. But if there was a way to make that even easier, I think I would be very happy and make sure that, you know, not force people. That's where you should draw the line. It's not the one true way of doing things. It's a good tool that you should use, you know, be careful. But for people who want to do it, who feel very strongly about it, and there are quite a few, just make their lives easier, and they're going to become even more productive.
All right. We're just about out of time. So I'd like to ask you each to take 1 minute and give us some of the ideas you have in terms of where you'd actually like to see some of this stuff go over the next few years. What are the areas that you'd like to see focused on in terms of IDE and tooling, and as well if you have any predictions of fear or dread or any great things that you see coming down the line? Let us, Cedric, we'll start with you, and then we'll go all the way down to Wayne.
Well, thanks. We started the other end. Well, yeah, I'm still definitely seeing myself writing a lot of Java for the foreseeable future. A lot of people say that Java is plateauing and that we're, I couldn't disagree more. I mean, I think Java is just beginning to pick up. We're beginning to understand a little bit more what we're doing. And people who are giving us the Java technology, and not just Sun, I'm talking about technology enablers like, you know, Eclipse and BA and other people, they're also becoming good enough at Java that they're actually making us more productive and allow us to write, you know, better applications. So I think we're just getting started, and I'm quite looking forward to, you know, writing in Java for the next 5 years, which, and I can't say the same thing when I was doing C++ back in the days. I wasn't looking forward to doing more C++.
Things that I would say is, one, that we probably will finally accept that we won't work in one language anymore. We've discussed that a couple of minutes ago, saying that we're also working in different languages already. So the acknowledgement that we will need tools that allow us to work in multiple languages in an integrated way, but also in the way we design our systems, that we don't assume that we, just because we do a Java project today, that we can use RMI for the communication, because that, of course, locks us into using Java on all the systems, that we can't write a service in Python or in Ruby. So the acknowledgement that we will use different languages in a mix on almost every project, I think, is quite important. And the other thing that I find really important is quick feedback. I think, for example, static typing was really important in the C days or C++ days, because it took you such a long time to realize you made a mistake because the compiler was so slow. With Eclipse now doing incremental compiles, it is not that important anymore. But, for example, now, as I mentioned early on, the acceptance testing is quite interesting. To find tools that could tell you this acceptance test doesn't run anymore. Things that allow me from the IDE to test a couple of scenarios rather than having to wait for, say, like 4 or 5 minutes for a couple of acceptance tests to run because they all fire up Internet Explorer, etc. So tooling around giving us ever faster feedback to work ever more efficiently.
I think three things are increasingly important and are basically changing the way that we think about programming. The first one is higher abstractions. Every couple of years, we raise the abstraction. Right now, the open question is whether that's going to happen in Java or somewhere else. In Java, it's happening with AOP and with annotations and things like that. In other languages, it's the duck typing. And my second point, which is metaprogramming, I think that metaprogramming is going to change the way that we think about the internet. It really already is, because we're seeing code that writes JavaScript, and that's defining a new API at the web level. And the third one is the notion of custom languages. And however that shows up, I mean, we really don't know yet. We're starting to see an increasing proliferation of domain-specific languages. And we're also starting to see some of the really cool kids start to edit the syntax tree. And this is a very promising area of research. We just don't know how it's going to play out yet.
I guess my biggest concern is that I have to write too much code, and too much code gets written for me. I would like to see the future be one of not so much code, and certainly generated code, I think, is something that needs to just not happen. I'd like to the fact that an IDE can generate code for me is cold comfort. I still have to manage that code once it's there. So I guess that would be the simplest thing, the simplest way for me to summarize what I'd like to see in the future is just less code.
All right, well, thank you very much, Cedric and Eric and Bruce and Wayne, for this. And at this point, I guess we have is it a coffee break? First one.